I'm Dr. Brian Goldman, host of the CBC podcast, The Dose. Each week, we answer vital health questions that will help you thrive, like, what does my mental health have to do with my gut? How can I prevent melanoma? How much sleep do I really need? And how can I manage my health without a family doctor? I chat with the top experts to bring you the latest evidence in plain language, all in about 20 minutes. Find The Dose on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Okay, we're recording. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi, Keith.
How was your day so far?
What's that?
How is your day so far?
My day so far has been all right. I haven't done anything. I watch television, and at my age, they don't let me go out and be with people yet. I'm not ready for people.
Because of COVID, you mean?
Yeah.
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 I'm chatting with Evelyn Levine, who's a few days from celebrating her 98th birthday. And for me, this is personal. I recently learned that my biological age is about 7 years older than it should be. 55 years instead of my actual 48. And through a rough, semi-scientific calculation, I've estimated this puts my future age of death at 73. So I want to know how Evelyn has aged so successfully.
Okay, just tell me what you want.
The pandemic prevented me from meeting Evelyn in person at her Toronto condo, but she assures me she looks much younger than her age.
Not that I'm boasting in any way, shape, or form, believe me, but no one that has seen me will give me 98 years. Nobody. To begin with, I'm walking straight. I think I'm the only senior that still has two knees and two hips, and I'm still going strong. I'm a very, very independent lady.
Although she's rarely smoked or drank, Evelyn's lifestyle hasn't always been exemplary. She's never thought much about what she eats or getting enough exercise.
You know what? I really have not gone on these crazy diets with food and whatever. And I'll be very honest with you. I'm too lazy to exercise. I don't... I'll go for a walk or something, but to go in, to belong to a gym and go on the machines or that, that's not for me. And I'm okay. Let's hope I keep it this though.
Evelyn is a survivor. By her 96th birthday, all her contemporaries had passed. But Evelyn had yet to experience a single age-related disease. No cancers, no diabetes, no dementia or osteoarthritis. Then, suddenly, age seemed like it was about to catch up with her. First, Evelyn was diagnosed with breast cancer, which is serious for anyone at any age. But she beat it. Then, shortly after her 97th birthday, she caught pneumonia, which required a lengthy hospital stay. Evelyn beat that too. And in 2020, she was diagnosed with COVID-19. For most people in their late 90s, the prognosis wouldn't be good. But this was Evelyn Levine. Of course she beat coronavirus. Why do you think that is, that you're still going strong? What's your secret?
What's my secret? If I tell you, you'll laugh. I don't drink. I don't smoke. And no sex. So that's my secret. I told that to my doctor, and she says she'll take the first two. Okay.
I'm Keith MacArthur, and this is Unlocking the Fountain, a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or reverse it. I've embraced age 73 as my potential expiration date, but not because I'm accepting it. I'm choosing to see it as a marker, one I want to beat. So how do I do this? For Evelyn, there's surely more at play than abstaining from sex, booze, and cigarettes. She appears to be one of the lucky ones, with genes that have helped her avoid age-related diseases. I've had my genes tested, and they're not like Evelyn's. I mean, I have a couple variants associated with longevity, but also some that work in the opposite direction. Most frightening is a variant in my APO gene that increases my odds of getting Alzheimer's. But none of this is set in stone. While genetics appear to be the most important factor in allowing people to live into their 90s, researchers say lifestyle, attitude, and environment play a larger role into our 70s or 80s. I've learned there are things I can do in my own life to turn back my aging clock by a decade, maybe longer. So I'm on a side quest. I want to put together a list, grounded in science, of the things I can do and the foods I should eat to maximize my lifespan and health span. While I wait for scientists to unlock their fountain of youth, I'm going to build my own.
In 12 short years, I've turned into an old man, while you haven't aged at all.
I tell you that somehow I can stop you from aging. Where do you want to stop? At 30? At 70?
It stops aging completely.
Yes.
How? This is what mankind has been dreaming of. Tell me the secret.
This is episode 6, How to Live Longer. After my kidney transplant in 2017, I was so grateful for a second chance at life that I dedicated myself to learning how to live happier and healthier. I read a bunch and interviewed dozens of experts. I learned a ton, and I wanted to share all this with others. So I launched a website and another podcast, and even wrote a couple wellness books. So I mostly know what I need to do to live healthy, even if I don't always do it. What I don't know yet is what aspects of healthy living matter most for extending my lifespan. So now, whenever I talk to an expert on aging, I ask what they've done in their own lives to try to live longer.
Well, I most definitely get more sleep now.
I exercise. I do weightlifting.
And of course, go in for frequent medical checkups.
That was Jay Olshansky, David Sinclair, and Alyssa Eppel, the University of California researcher who studies telomeres. She found that the stress of being a parent caregiver can add as much as a decade to your biological age. My wife Laura and I, we relate to this. Caring for our son Bryson's complex needs takes a toll, and the chronic stress appears to have shortened both of our lifespans. But Eppel has newer research, which suggests that maybe we can reverse it. After her study of parents, Eppel was part of a research team that brought in another group of full-time caregivers. This time, it was people caring for spouses with dementia.
So they're elderly, and they're not taking care of themselves. So they tend to be overweight, they tend to be sedentary, they tend to have a lot of sadness or depressive symptoms.
And their biological age tends to be much older than it should be, as measured by telomeres, the protective caps at the ends of DNA chromosomes that are known to shrink with age. The caregivers were divided into two groups. Half of them were put on an exercise program for 6 months. The other half were told they were on a waiting list for the program.
And those who got the exercise actually, by the end of the 6 months, had telomere lengthening. So they did protect their telomeres. So in a sense, you know, two caregivers, two people under a lot of daily stress, exercise is essential. Exercise is protecting ourselves from what otherwise is a stress acceleration of our aging.
In other words, while chronic stress was speeding up the aging clock, exercise was slowing it down. Eppel and her colleagues wondered what other correlations they could find.
The door was really opened in this interesting way where we couldn't ignore the finding. We just kept, in study after study, wanting to also measure telomeres, see how they were related to other aspects of emotional well-being and lifestyle. And then there are, because it's so easy to measure, there are just so many hundreds of studies on telomeres now that we know that we move them around with our daily choices.
This trove of telomere research will be a good start in building my blueprint for aging. But it's not the only input. While Eppel was correlating behaviors with longevity by measuring telomeres, author Dan Buettner took a different approach. He searched the world for regions where people lived longer than average. He called these areas blue zones and identified five of them in small regions of Japan, Italy, Costa Rica, Greece, and California. Buettner visited these zones with a team of doctors, scientists, and demographers to identify what the people in these regions have in common. Buettner identified 9 things people in these blue zones do that he thinks can help explain their longevity. These are behaviors related to exercise, diet, and community. We'll get into these. For now, I'll just point out that much of what Buettner found is supported by other longevity research. So I overlay telomere studies and blue zones research with other scientific studies that measure which actions lead to age-related diseases and early death. And when I put it all together, I start to see the outlines of a fountain. Picture a classical white fountain. Water flows up through a hidden tube in the middle and cascades down multiple tiers. Our fountain? It has 3 tiers. Eat right, move right, and think right. And each tier includes some unexpected recommendations. But before I get into the details, a caveat. While everything I mention here is grounded in science, not all of it applies equally for everyone. What's good for the average person's health isn't always good for your health. A personal example. Boosting the immune system is good for almost everyone, but not for me, because my health depends on keeping my immunity low so my body doesn't reject my kidney. So consider what works for your own body, mind, and health. And please check with a doctor before any extreme lifestyle changes. Tier 1, eat right. Eating right is about 3 things: what you eat, how much you eat, and when you eat. Let's start with what you eat. First, eat more plants.
I try not to eat a lot of meat.
David Sinclair from Harvard.
Yeah, I do like meat like most people, but try not to overeat meat because it's been shown time and time again that vegetarianism is better for longevity.
Researchers in California followed nearly 100,000 people over decades and concluded that vegetarians live 6 to 9 years longer than their carnivorous counterparts. Other studies have found no differences or smaller ones. Regardless, vegetarians almost certainly have longer health spans. Multiple studies have shown that vegetarians are less likely to get cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and dementia than meat eaters. Some evidence suggests you can delay age-related diseases even more if you add fatty fish like salmon to a vegetarian diet. My son Connor is vegetarian, so our family rarely eats meat at home. And the more plant-based foods I eat, the less I crave meat. Now, it is possible not to eat meat and still be unhealthy. Hello, party pack of potato chips. I see you, double-stuffed Oreos. So the second rule of eating for longevity is to avoid processed foods. People in blue zones are much more likely to cook their own meals using simple ingredients. And one 2020 study found that people who consumed the highest amount of processed foods, things like ham and bacon and store-bought baked goods like croissants and cookies, were twice as likely to have short telomeres as those who ate the least processed foods. The third recommendation for longevity eating is to cut way back on sugar and white carbs. I've already cut back on both processed foods and sugar, but I know I have room for improvement on both of these. One good step I've taken is to cut out pretty much all sugary drinks like sodas or fruit juices. A 2014 study from Appel's group found that daily consumption of sugary sodas takes years from your life. If you drink one standard personal-sized bottle of soda each day, your telomeres will be nearly 5 years shorter, according to the research. But what about booze? Well, Buettner found that people in four of the blue zones drink wine regularly but moderately. Those in the fifth blue zone, the Seventh-day Adventists of Loma Linda, California, they don't drink at all. Buettner recommends a glass or two each day and suggests the best time is before dinner. I have a glass of wine or beer maybe 3 days a week and rarely have more than one a day. Booze doesn't seem to have much of a positive effect on your telomeres, but binge drinking does rob years from your life by shortening them. For the average person, a drink, or maybe two, probably won't hurt and might actually help. Eating right is about more than what you eat and drink. It's also about when and how much. Early in this series, we learned that the first proven method of increasing animal lifespan was starvation, or at least severe caloric restriction. So, should I be starving myself? I reach out to Peter Attia, a physician who's become an expert in longevity, partly by experimenting on himself. And Attia says it's complicated. While severe caloric restriction may increase longevity, it can have some serious side effects. It can lower your immune response and can lead to a dangerous loss of skeletal muscle.
The other issue is very few people can live in a constant state of caloric deprivation. You know, if you just say, look, you're going to spend the rest of your life eating 30% below your optimal caloric intake. So for many people, uninterrupted caloric restriction, though theoretically an option, turns out to be practically not one.
But there is another option, one Attia has experimented with quite a bit: fasting. You may have friends who've tried intermittent fasting as a way to lose weight, and it can work for that. But it also seems to turn back the aging clock. It does this by targeting mTOR, the nutrient sensor built into cells. If there are enough nutrients coming in, mTOR tells cells to divide. But during fasting, when there aren't enough nutrients, it tells them to pull into the pit stop to repair and recycle themselves, which slows aging.
Intermittent fasting inhibits mTOR.
That's Joan Manick, a pharmaceutical industry scientist who studies mTOR and drugs that impact it.
When you inhibit mTOR, things like autophagy, it's this mechanism, it's like the garbage disposal of the cell. It gets rid of all the garbage in the cell. That gets turned on when you inhibit mTOR. So during that period of fasting, you're kind of cleaning up debris in your cell.
I learned there are a few different types of fasting. The most rigorous involves consuming no calories or minimal calories every second day. That seems too hard for me. But there are easier approaches, like confining all your calories to an 8-hour period, say between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. every day. I try this for a couple days, and it's actually not that hard. But I do find myself using it as an excuse to eat whatever I want during those 8 hours. I end up eating more processed and sugary foods, so I'd need to come up with a plan of how to avoid doing that before trying it again. There's even some emerging evidence that partial fasting could work. So maybe instead of fully fasting every second day, you could, for example, just cut out proteins. Because mTOR requires a number of nutrients to be activated. And if just one is missing, that could be enough for mTOR to tell cells to stop dividing and repair and recycle themselves instead. Even if we don't fast, we may benefit from just eating less. Dan Buettner found that people in blue zones tend to eat their biggest meal early in the day and stop eating before they feel full. The people of Okinawa, Japan, even have a term for this. Before each meal, they say the words harahachibu, which roughly translates to eat until your belly is just 80% full. There's a lot to remember in this eating tier, but it's well summed up in 7 words from food writer Michael Pollan. Eat food, he writes, meaning real food, not processed. Eat food, not too much, mostly plants.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Our fountain's second tier is to move right. Based on everything I've learned so far, exercise really shouldn't be good for longevity. Over the short term, it causes inflammation and a harmful biological imbalance known as oxidative stress. And opposite to fasting and rapamycin, it tips mTOR in the wrong direction, shifting cells from repair to growth mode. And yet, you can't build your fountain without it. It's not like I didn't know exercise was good for me, but I always thought it was mostly about heart health and weight loss. But exercise wards off age-related diseases to such a large extent that even scientists are still marveled by it.
We don't really understand why exercise is so good for you.
That's Judy Campisi, a biochemist from the Buck Institute for Research on Aging. The evidence for exercise is overwhelming. A study of nearly 6,000 American adults found that people who exercised 5 times a week for at least 30 to 40 minutes each time had a biological age 9 years younger than those with a sedentary lifestyle. But does that translate into actual longevity? Absolutely. And it's not just that people who exercise have fewer heart attacks. They're also delaying almost every other age-related disease, including cancers, diabetes, and dementia. A 2011 study of nearly 500,000 people from Taiwan found that people who did moderate activity for as little as 90 minutes a week lived 3 years longer than those who didn't exercise at all. And the best part about exercise? You get benefits no matter what age you start. Near Barzilai.
The most important thing for your audience is to know that exercise is probably the most impactful thing that you could do at any age. It's never too late to exercise. I don't suggest that if you're 80-year-old, go and jog now. You know, there are process of how you do it and consult the physician, et cetera, et cetera. But exercise is the most important thing.
What else does the science tell us about exercise? First, while exercise like weight training and yoga are good for you, the biggest longevity boost comes from moderate to intense aerobic exercise, like running or swimming. Much of the benefit appears related to putting your body through physical stress for a prolonged period of time. You need to get a little uncomfortable, maybe even out of breath. A leisurely walk won't cut it, but a brisk one might. Second, there are diminishing returns. When it comes to longevity, marathoners might not be better off than people who jog 5 kilometers 4 or 5 times a week. Peter Attia.
It is sort of an upside down J curve where most people under most reasonable conditions are getting an increasing amount of benefit with increasing exercise. But above a certain point, that benefit vanishes.
And have you ever scaled back on your exercise because of that?
I have. Yeah, I was definitely in the too much camp, but I made a very deliberate decision to shift the focus from performance to longevity.
The final tier of our fountain is more broad. It involves mental health, attitude, and avoiding risky behaviors. I'm calling this tier Think Right. Let's start with mental health. From the research Epple's team did with caregivers, we already know that stress can accelerate aging. And it's the same with stress's regular companions, anxiety and depression. This is something else I don't like to hear. I have chronic anxiety that sometimes leads to depression. But the good news for people like us is that if we can find a medicine that treats our symptoms, it can also help our telomeres.
I have a colleague at UCSF who has been studying antidepressants and depression. And one thing that he found was the more years of depression, the shorter the telomeres. But that was only untreated depression. So the years on antidepressants helped or ruled out that relationship, meaning that they do tend to buffer our stress response.
After my dad died, my depression got bad, and I was prescribed an SSRI, a common type of antidepressant. It made a huge difference for me. But the stigma around mental health made me feel like I should get off it as quickly as possible, which I did. But shortly into the pandemic, my anxiety got bad and led to heavy depression once again. I went back on sertraline, also known as Zoloft, and realized that I just function better when I'm taking it. Now I know it might also be helping me to live longer. It's worth remembering that not all stress is bad for us. The stress we put on our bodies by fasting or exercise appears to increase lifespan and health span. And Epple says it's the same with mental stress. Chronic stress that makes you want to hide in the bathroom isn't good for you. But short-term stress that creates a little fear, but also excitement, might be. Things like going on a first date or preparing for a big presentation. And people can learn how to respond to stress in healthier ways. Several studies have shown that meditation can lead to longer telomeres, though a 2021 review of these studies says more work needs to be done before the effect can be quantified. Thinking right is also about attitude. Samir Sinha, a geriatric doctor in Toronto, says there are clear differences in the way people respond to getting old.
You know, I see two types of people. I see some folks who, you know, have unfortunately been dealt, you know, bad experiences and just are not terribly resilient people. And so everything that happens, for example, if they develop an illness, they can no longer walk as easily. Some people just internalize that and become less able to cope and become angry at the world and therefore end up isolating themselves and even become harder for them to receive care and harder for them to even seek out care as well. And then I see a group who are aging as successfully as possible, or, you know, in the sense that these tend to be the most highly resilient people ever. And partly, I think it's just this attitude that they've been born with. I've had the privilege of caring for a number of Holocaust survivors, people who've survived residential school experiences. It just had so many horrible things happen to them in their life. And yet, you know, when I see them and I just think, how are you still smiling? Why are you so grateful for living? Those patients fascinate me.
The final piece of the thinking right tier in our fountain is about avoiding risky behaviors. Driving drunk or without a seatbelt could lower your life expectancy. So could choosing not to go for checkups or get vaccines. But the most significant risk is one that more than 1 billion people on the planet still engage in: smoking. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention says people who smoke die at least 10 years earlier than those who don't. And multiple studies show that non-smokers have longer telomeres than smokers. Smoking boosts your chance of getting many, many diseases, including lung cancer, heart attacks, strokes, and type 2 diabetes. You're more likely to go blind sooner and to get dementia. When is it too late to make changes that can have a meaningful impact on longevity? That's different for everyone. But it's older than I would have guessed. Former smokers live longer than current smokers. People who start exercising or eating healthy in middle age live longer than those who don't. And Samir Sinha tells me about a landmark Swedish study of people 75 and older. The study concluded that even after age 75, lifestyle behaviors are associated with longer survival. The biggest longevity boosters after 75? Physical activity like walking and swimming, not smoking, and maintaining good social connections.
Those are powerful factors that are all within our realm of control, even at later ages, that we can do, that don't require us to take a pill or take a drug, but just require us to make sure that we're trying to get some exercise in, making sure that we're keeping in touch and connected with other people, and not smoking. So that's the research that I hold on to, because often my patients want to know, what can I do here and now to stay healthy and independent when the majority of them are in these later age groups, and that's what they're looking for.
A little while after Buettner's first Blue Zones book came out, he made another discovery. On a trip back to the Blue Zone in Ikaria, Buettner met a Greek war veteran who had lived in the United States for 40 years. While there, he was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer. He returned home to Ikaria.
I started living the Ikarian lifestyle and survived another 35 years or so. And he has no idea how what he did or why he survived this terminal condition. And I had one of those aha moments, those epiphanies, that I was getting it all wrong. I was looking for a pattern to pursue, and what I really needed was a blueprint for an environment so that the right behaviors ensue. And that was the big aha moment. It took me 8 years.
That was the moment Buettner realized that living a Blue Zones lifestyle was extremely difficult for people who didn't live in a Blue Zones environment.
In Blue Zones, healthy plant-based food is going to be cheapest and most accessible. Every time people go to work or a friend's house or out to eat, it occasions a walk. The option to implode into your room and get on your device isn't there, because if you don't come out for a day, somebody's going to be knocking on your door. And the reason these factors in Blue Zones work is because they're baked into the environment. And they architect people's decision unconsciously from the time they wake up. They're subtle, but there's a lot of them. And they add up to significantly better behaviors and manifestly longer life.
So Buettner decided to change his own environment, choosing to live in walkable neighborhoods with easy access to recreation and social interactions. But not everybody has that luxury. And of course, that's the case for many of the recommendations in this episode. There's privilege in having time to exercise, go in for regular checkups, and cook unprocessed meals from scratch. It's a lot harder to do if you're stitching together multiple jobs at minimum wage, or just a busy working parent trying to also oversee virtual school during a pandemic. Buettner recognized this too. So he began working with local governments across North America to transform communities into mini Blue Zones, by making it easier to do helpful things like walking and eating fresh vegetables, and harder to do unhelpful things like driving and eating fast food.
We want to change the environment so the healthy choice is not only easiest, but it's unavoidable.
And so an example of a policy, would that be like implementing a soda tax?
Soda tax can be one of them. It turns out that very few cities have the appetite for something that radical, but it could be a complete streets policy, for example, so that no matter where you live in Canada, your streets last about 7 years, and they need to be ripped up or redone or resurfaced. And every time that street is redone, there's an opportunity to put a bike path in, put a sidewalk in, plant trees, ease traffic. And you can increase the physical activity of an entire city by up to 30% based on how you design the street.
Buettner offers another example.
Take two neighborhoods, identical demographics, poor people. In one of those neighborhoods, you allow billboard signs to advertise junk food. In the other neighborhood, there's an ordinance against junk food advertising and billboard signs. Just by taking out those billboard signs, you see the BMI or the obesity rate drop by about 10% because people aren't always reminded to eat that crap food.
Buettner still believes in the 9 Blue Zone secrets from his first book. It's just that he believes the best way to make them happen is about setting yourself up in the best environment, being part of the right community. Of those 9 longevity secrets, just 1 is about exercise. 3 are about food, eating more plants, eating less overall, and drinking wine in moderation. 1 is about living with less stress. 1's about maintaining a purpose in our lives after we retire. And the other 3 are all about community. Being part of faith-based groups, building homes around large multi-generational families, and surrounding yourself with friends who encourage a healthy lifestyle. This focus on community and purpose, it reminds me again of Evelyn Levine. In recent years, she's lost everyone she was closest to, including her husband and her sister. And of course, pandemic restrictions have made seniors even more isolated. How does it feel now to have outlived most people your age?
It's very, very lonesome. It is. You know, sometimes the phone doesn't ring. You know, friends, there are none left, really. They're all gone, like you know, and I can't get them back, so it's not easy, no. But however, I still have family, and it's okay. Well, I'm just very happy to be here.
While genetic predisposition and healthy living can stave off age-related diseases, staving off loneliness can be more of a challenge. But it seems like Evelyn has found a way to beat that too. Before the pandemic, she'd sit in the lobby of her condo building and knit winter hats and scarves for homeless people. Other seniors would pass through the lobby and ask what she was doing. And one by one, they joined her. The group became known as the Knitting Ladies.
And we have made hats, and I think up until now, we have given them, about 150 hats? Yeah, and we're still going strong. We're still knitting.
And so the 98-year-old who'd beaten cancer, pneumonia, and COVID-19 also managed to find herself a purpose and a community. I don't have Evelyn's longevity genes. Heck, I probably don't have her resilience genes either. What I do have is a blueprint for a 3-tier fountain of youth. I need to move better, eat better, and think better. And change my environment so these things feel easier. I can't do it overnight, so I've set some specific goals. First, I gotta start getting more exercise. I'm aiming to run at least 3 days a week and do strength training or yoga on other days. Second, I'm gonna shed some extra pounds. My body mass index is currently in the overweight zone. I wanna get it down to the high end of normal. The exercise will help with this, but so will changes to my diet. I'm already eating mostly plants, but I'm eating too much, especially processed sugary foods. If I can build my own fountain, I feel good about adding a decade to my life expectancy, living to 83 instead of 73. But that's still a far cry from where I started this journey, with fantasies of living to 150 or even 1,000 years. That's going to depend on major breakthroughs from doctors, scientists, and pharmaceutical companies. And the first way humans might benefit from these interventions might not be by extending our own lives, but those of our pets. Next time on Unlocking the Fountain.
Quincy? Hey, buddy, sit.
Oh, there we go. That's a good sit.
Oh, yeah, I heard about you. You're trying to make dogs live longer.
I often get asked by cat people, you know, why are you doing this in dogs? Why are you not doing this in cats?
It's a few more years that he can live and sort of experience the world, and that would be nice. It's a few more years that we can have him here because he's a really good boy.
Unlocking the Fountain is hosted and written by me, Keith MacArthur. Our associate producers are Sarah Melton and Graham McDonald, who also does our sound design. Our digital producers are S.K. Robert and Emily Cannell. Chris Oak is our story editor. Additional audio from Paramount Pictures and ITV Anglia. Our senior producer is Tina Verma, and our executive producer is Arif Nourani.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.